It's all here.
A no-hitter, grand slam.
Have all the fun you want.
Every moment, every game.
Make sure you guys tune in.
Catch the White Sox only on NBC Sports Chicago.
This is the Bulls Talk Podcast, presented by Coors Light. I'm Jason Goff, and I'm joined by my teammates Casey Johnson, Rob Schaefer, and our digital content producer, Tony Gill. Coming up on the show, we'll discuss the curious comments of one Josh Smith about Doc Rivers. We'll also talk about Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, and the Philadelphia 76ers, and how Ben Simmons could fit on the Bulls. And also, as a Bulls fan, what are you feeling watching the Atlanta Hawks and other teams get this far in these NBA playoffs?
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
This meeting is being recorded. Man, the association just never fails to disappoint. It just never fails, ever.
Yeah, the association will provide.
It's insane. No other league is like this, man. I mean, I don't think. Do you? I mean, the gossip and the shit talking and the just crazy shit.
I don't know if there's another league that promotes it.
Yeah.
You know, the culture promotes it and the NBA fully accepts it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. We're recording. Yeah. I always forget we're recording.
It felt like he was harboring that for a long time.
Yes.
Like, since his career ended. Like, man, you know, I really hate Doc Rivers. That dude sucked.
The random Mike Woodson trash at the end, that's the one that killed me, man. That was hilarious. Oh, my God.
What did Mike Woodson do to you, man?
Mike Woodson, you trash, too. It's like, what? That's when I started laughing really hard.
There he is.
There's the man.
Hold on, boys.
There's the man.
How you guys doing?
Oh, you know, we're just talking about how the association never fails to disappoint, man.
Man. Man, the things hockey doesn't have to worry about, I tell you. Oh, shit. Should have never gave y'all money. All right. So where are we going to start with this? Are we waiting for Rob?
Yeah, waiting for Rob.
Oh, see, I was on a heater and I just stopped.
I was going to say, just keep that rolling. Rob can join in if we're always recording, man.
Oh, my God. So I didn't listen to that thing that. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you seem pretty in it in terms of your thoughts on Josh.
I mean, f*** him, man. Let me tell you something. Let me tell you something right now. I'm sorry. I know we're recording, but that's punk shit, bro. That's sucker shit of the highest order. Mm. And Josh Smith need not talk about anybody's extracurricular activities or doings. Like, that's tough, man. Mm. That, you know... I don't know. I guess I'm at a different point in life tone where, you know, some of the shit that used to be funny or cool to me, that just ain't it, man. You know, you could say whatever. And then these goofies on Twitter, oh, look at how many leads Doc Rivers have blown. I don't give a shit about Doc Rivers as a coach. Mm. You saying those extra things are unnecessary. Mm-hmm. I mean, and you know, you could tell he was vibing. You know, he was getting it off. He was sweating. He was in front of some apartment complex, which looks like every apartment complex in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, it was just – it's just weird. It's unnecessary. Like, if you would have stuck to the in-game adjustments, things fine. I got no problem with that. It's basketball. These dudes who want to knuckle up and get angry at you critiquing their basketball skills or coaching or management or talent, whatever the case may be, that's – yeah, that comes with the territory. But when you start to make reference to a man's personal life and family life, it just – it opens up – first of all, it opens up a whatever he and his family has gone through, it opens up a vein that they maybe thought was closed, maybe still going – I don't know where it is. But to say that – and feel like it should have or doesn't have any repercussions. Either you're an idiot or you don't care. And either way, I got no use for you. Because he's not just affecting Doc Rivers when he says stuff like that. You dig? Mm. So it's cool to get the ha-has off and joke and laugh about it. But I'm sorry, man. If I was Doc Rivers or if I was one of Doc Rivers' kids, it'd have to be a problem when I saw you. When I see you, it'd be a problem. And whatever the case may be, that's just punk shit, man. Like, we're supposed to be better than that. And when I say we, I'm talking about as humans. I don't care what you say about a dude basketball-wise. But taking that somewhere it's not supposed to go. And on top of it, you weren't even in the conversation with anybody else. You were saying all these things off your own volition. So, cool. I just know that NBA players should be very careful when they start saying things like that about other NBA players or NBA coaches. And on top of it, he knows how much respect Doc has around the league, and he knows the questions that people have had about Doc. All I want to know is why he didn't say this shit when he was a Clipper, or why he didn't say this shit while he was still in the league.
Yeah,
that's why it's sucker shit to me, and that's why I won't honor it. And you know me, Tone. I don't call guys out their name. I don't, you know, I try to keep it to basketball, but that was clown shit. After you get over the laugh and after you get over like, oh, I can't believe Josh Smith said that, realize who it's affecting too. You know, Doc Rivers can handle his. He's his own man. But what about, you know, and I'm only making reference to what he said. What about his wife? You know, what about his kids? Mm-hmm. You know, you don't know what they've gone through. So to throw that out there for a world that doesn't know about any of that,
yep,
that's sucker shit, and I can't honor it. And I don't care who feels what way about it. It shouldn't be honored. After, you know, after the initial, like, oh, my God, immediately I turn to, like, this is disappointing. Mm-hmm. Like, this is, like, from who? From you? Yeah. Like, from Josh Smith? Because when – listen, I was in Atlanta for 2 years. And I'll leave it at that. Mm. not from Josh Smith. Not from Josh Smith. So, yeah, man.
What's up?
I asked Tony, why is Mike Woodson catching strays at the end?
Man? This is another thing. It's another thing. Let me tell you. Through all of my career failures and achievements, I have tried my hardest not to put either one on anybody else. I failed at times by putting blame on somebody else. But, yeah, Mike Woodson – who you think got more respect around the league? Doc Rivers, Mike Woodson, or Josh Smith? Mm-hmm. Josh Smith has had an immovable chip on his shoulder since Jay Billis said what he said about him on draft night and has never been able to reach his absolute glory because he didn't work hard enough. Simple as that. Josh Smith had all the talent in the world. When I got down to Atlanta, people were talking about how good Josh Smith was. I'm like, I watch him. I watch him a lot. I know who he is as a player. But they started comparing his stat lines to only Josh Smith and LeBron have had 16-5-5 6 years in a row. I'm like, yeah, but Josh's was 16-5-5. LeBron's is 27-8-8. There's a slight difference. You know what I mean? Like, it's and then when that team needed Josh Smith to carry it, Josh Smith was ASAP. He was, I should say, AWOL and ASAP. As soon as time came to be called upon, Josh was up out of there. He was the third best player on a really good team for a very long time and found out he couldn't be the best player. He didn't take care of his body well enough. And at the end, his descent was a lot more exaggerated than it probably should have been. So, you know, these are basketball things.
Rob, what do you think about it?
Same thing. I think that's out of bounds. And that was like the most jarring thing ever, that quick cut right there. I don't know much about Josh Smith, the person or anything like that. But yeah, I think if you're going to criticize Doc's adjustments, rotations, I mean, he went 10 deep in a game seven, and what has he lost the most game sevens among any coach in franchise history? He hasn't been out of the second round since the Boston days. Like, it's not good, but I wouldn't go there. I mean, that's just who I am, Jason. I agree with you on that. And yeah, it was super jarring. And hadn't thought about Josh Smith in a while. I haven't thought about Josh Smith since like 2K14.
And you're not gonna think about him. And you're not gonna think about him after this week either. That's the other thing. You're not gonna have to think about him after this week. It's just gross, man. It's just gross. And on top of all of this, I agree with him. I agree with him. Like, for instance, in that second half, I thought Shake Milton was hurt. I'm like, you need something. You need a bigger guard who can get to the lane. Like Seth Curry was, hey, I thought he was terrific this entire series, but there's certain places he can get and there's certain shots he can get off. They needed a bigger guard to kind of collapse some of that defense that was going to shoot. And we can get right to the Ben Simmons stuff right here.
I was like, I got a bigger guard on the tip of my tongue here.
This is where the older, more empathetic person in me is going to come through as well. I'm going to tell y'all right now, it hurts to watch Ben Simmons play basketball. Yeah. And because, you know, we have a lot of like when Chuck Knoblauch couldn't throw to first base, or when other guys struggle with things that aren't as important as shooting a basketball, for a basketball player, for a star player at that, yo, that dude is going through. Have you guys seen the Showtime documentary? All right, so it came out during the process of him being selected number one. And you learn a lot about his family background and the mental health history of his family. I understand why Ben Simmons is going through some of the things he's going through. The dude has a severe mental block now when it comes to shooting the basketball and having confidence in shooting it. And you can say, hey, you know what? He's just not ready for the moment, or the game is in his head. I went back and watched that game a third time today. Every moment where there was a close up and he didn't know the camera was on him, you could watch at walking back to the bench. He was saying at one point in the third quarter, I'm all right. I don't know who's asking him if he's all right, but this is like,
that's what I was thinking, watching him get into like slap fights at every dead ball. Like, as
well, that was him and John
trying to get himself going, maybe, or something like that. That's what I thought. I don't know. It was bizarre.
John Collins and he was mixing it up the entire game. But yeah, man, Ben, he had 12 assists through two and a half quarters. So I'm not getting, this is the thing. We are like, because of like the ESPNization of all of our conversations, there has to be like, all right, this poor person won a debate, this person lost a debate. This is not a zero sum argument. I'll take Ben Simmons right now. I just need Ben Simmons to unlock Ben Simmons, whatever that means. I'm not trying to diagnose the guy, whatever the case may be, but I take that dude right now. He's an all NBA defender. And if you really watched in that fourth quarter, you know, Trae Young, he was defended by Ben. And yeah, the other thing I have, and I can ask you guys, you know, that team is not built for him. And I said it 3 years ago, that they would never, ever win a championship together. He and Joel Embiid. Never, ever. And some of the stuff you saw from the Bulls last year, where all of a sudden, when you get that kind of big, you got to slow that game down. How many times in game seven alone did you see Ben Simmons passing behind himself? Like, guys trailing him on secondary breaks. The ultimate turnover in that game was when Joel Embiid lost the ball after a pump fake at the three-point arc and then dribbling up, and Danilo Gallinari slapped it out his hand. Before that, Matisse Thybulle, he fouled Kevin Huerter at the three-point line. Like, there were moments right before that where I'm like, yo, this can be all put on Ben Simmons because he hasn't played well from an offensive standpoint, but I take him because that team is not built for him. That team does not run enough for him, and he needs to be on the break. He needs to be running and needs to be surrounded by shooters. And if there's only one other shooter, because the other player that has to be on the floor with him is Joel Embiid. And he's a shooter, don't get me wrong, but he's a guy who, he patrols the lane, high post, and the perimeter. So you got to play around him. If Ben Simmons gets on a team that I think is kind of tailored to him, then I think these results are a lot different. I think he plays with a little bit more freedom in terms of when he shoots, how he shoots. Like, he had to try to perfect that jump hook that he still hasn't perfected because of where he has the ball on the floor, because Embiid is the most important player on that team. I didn't think they were going to win a championship when they were put together. Obviously now it may not happen because, Ben might be on the way out, but yeah, Ben's got something going on that I think is more than basketball that I hope he unlocks, because we can get our jokes off about what he's not doing, but he's a stellar talent. I'd love to see him fulfill his promise.
Yeah, I mean, he's a three-time All-Star at age 24. So, I mean, obviously there's a lot to build on there, and I agree that maybe in the right situation, things can be different for him, but it certainly has the feel of the end of an era last night, and certainly has a feel of possibly the dissolution of a partnership just with the post-game comments. And I know those are said in the heat of the moment, and I know we have to love honesty in what we do for a living, but man, that was some pretty raw stuff. And it obviously gets amplified also via Twitter and social media. But look, Daryl Morey is a smart guy. He's a creative guy. You have to believe he's going to look at what he has there and what's the best solution moving forward. And, the league's not dumb. They saw what happened last night. They saw the comments that came out of the post game. And there's going to be sharks circling for blood there. I mean, if you're the Sixers, you obviously have to get his trade value up. I mean, it's amazing we're talking about propping up a trade value of a guy who's a three-time All-Star at age 24, but right, there it is, man. I mean, if you're playing that way offensively in a game seven, serious questions have to emerge if you can, be part of a championship team, especially there. I mean, maybe elsewhere, maybe things change the scenery. We've all seen them benefit some people. Shout out to campaign for almost a double-double starting in the conference final.
Yeah.
I mean, changes of scenery can do wonders for people, but that was – I agree with you, Jason. That was painful to watch. And Rob, you wrote about it, so you should probably add your voice to this conversation.
So, yeah, I mean, that's something I was going to kind of pose to the group is, Jason, you said you'd take him in a heartbeat.
Yep.
Do you take him on the Bulls? To what extent would you as a fan want the team to explore that? Because I wrote about it today and I can give my thoughts afterwards. But I hate the trend of kind of judging a guy solely on his worst night. I think that was, pretty comfortably the worst night of Ben Simmons' NBA career, not only because of the performance and the culmination of what the performance was, but also, like you guys said, the post-game shrapnel that he was catching throughout the different Zoom conferences. But this guy's not only a three-time All-Star, like, there just are not that many players in the world that can do what he does defensively in terms of credibly defending all five positions. And it, just in terms of his playmaking, especially in the open floor, I totally agree, Jason. I think in the right offensive context, he could be optimized a little bit more, but to what extent would you guys go down the path for the Bulls? That's been a huge, huge topic of conversation
I'll start by saying that that in no way, shape, or form would I trade Zach LaVine for Ben Simmons. Just
no.
None whatsoever.
No.
Billy would love that.
Yeah, to me, the only way that Ben Simmons makes sense on the Bulls is alongside Zach LaVine. So
yeah.
I hate to do bad podcasting here, but we might be done with the convo right there, because other than Zach LaVine, I don't see what assets work going to Philly to get Ben Simmons, particularly when you talk about a contract size that he has. So, and look, here's the other thing. You can say what you want about Ben Simmons' defensive ability, and you're spot on, Rob, but this is an offensive era. This is an offensive league now, man. The times have changed. I'm not saying you don't need to play defense, because you do, but you need to outscore teams and outscore people in this day and age, particularly with the reliance on the three-point shot. So you could make a case that Zach LaVine, as crazy as it sounds, you can make a case that Zach LaVine is a better player than Ben Simmons right now. You could just make that case. I'm not saying that you're right or wrong, but you couldn't even made that conversation a year ago, and now I think you could. So,
well, that's what people have been asking me about this throughout the day, and I don't see it, not only because of everything you just said, KC, but also how much resource wise the Bulls invested in building around Zach and Vucevic at the deadline last year. And I just don't think you, because like the argument for doing a trade like that is that you have Zach entering a contract year and you kind of protect against him potentially walking for nothing. And again, there's no indication that's going to happen at this point, but that's what you're protecting against. And you're setting yourself up for a young player who you think you can, you know, unlock, who's under a contract for the next 4 years. Like that's the argument, but I don't see it. I agree with the larger point you just made there, Casey, about comparing the two, although I think it's an apples and oranges comparison between them as players. But we got to let Tony Gill do a victory lap here. Cause Tony, I saw you resurfacing.
How did Joel Embiid make it to the conference finals separate from the Philadelphia 76ers? Because I know that's how a lot of his fans.
Tony sprays to all fields. He's got other things that he can plan.
Oh, for. Okay. And before Tony sprays to his fields, I'll just say this: I'd like to see Ben Simmons on a team with people who run and jump and shoot. And when's the last time you seen Ben Simmons throw an alley-oop to anybody? Or, you know what I mean? Like, I'd like for him to not be the most athletic person on the team, too. Like, he is a very specific fit. I agree. And I'll ask you this. 15-9-6. Is that okay for a season? 15 points, 9 assists, 6 rebounds.
Are we going back to Josh Smith stats? Or what are we doing?
I just went back to Jason Kidd's MVP year where he got snubbed because Tim Duncan won it that year. So like I've constantly been comparing this dude to Jason Kidd from the moment I saw him, just a bigger version of him. And you know, hopefully his shot will come around the way Jason's did at the end of his career as well.
I mean, Ben, you're right, Jason. He's such a unique player in the modern NBA. Like your team has to be really specific in order to get the most out of him. And right now, like Philly doesn't have that. And whoever, you know, in the future takes him on, they're going to have to be dedicated to whatever accentuates Ben Simmons' best properties. That's what we're going to go with. And everybody else has to fit with that. But I made the argument like at the beginning of the month that, look, man, I would take Zach LaVine over Ben Simmons right now. And he's an all-world defender. But at the end of games where I can't play him, like that's a thing.
Yeah.
Like that is a problem that I can't use him late in games down the stretch because either they're going to foul him once he touches the ball and he's not shooting. And I know people give crap to Giannis because of his, you know, lack of shooting ability, but at least he's shooting. And I think that's probably the most frustrating part about Ben, and it may go to what Jason brought up earlier about the mental blockage with him is just, you just have to do it. Like you just have to do it. Even if you miss, like just to keep people honest, like watching a playmaker like Ben Simmons this season, and if people are watching him, and if you're in Chicago, you watch Philadelphia basketball, having him in the dunker spot in the half court on a consistent basis felt gross and wrong to me because he's an excellent playmaker. And having him stick there because he can't play really much outside with Embiid there, that was annoying to me because I know he's a great playmaker. Like, I know he's good with the basketball operating in an offense. And to put him right there was out of necessity for the way the team was constructed, but it was also weird. But yeah, like Zach LaVine, like, I don't see him coming to the Bulls just because you would have to trade him and the whole point would be have him pair with Zach LaVine. But I don't think, I mean, he's the 3-time All-Star. I don't think they have enough to go get him.
Yeah. No, Tony, what you said about the dunker spot thing got me thinking, like, I just think one of the ways to accentuate his talents in a half-court setting, Ben Simmons, is to maybe use him as, like, kind of a playmaking four. Like, think about how the Bulls used Thad Young this season, where you have a guard who attracts so much attention and double teams off screen and roll, and you use him as the screener there, and then you can kind of unlock him in advantage situations, 3-on-4s. He can playmake. You know, maybe if the thing is he'd have to expand his offensive game to floater range scoring wise, but like if he could be a multi-pronged threat in that way, I think that's one way to leverage him. And you could obviously do that with a guy like Zach LaVine And obviously, you know, if you're using him functionally as a four in certain contexts, like putting him next to a floor spacing five and Vooch, although, you know, depending on how fast the Bulls play, it could all tie back to that point you were saying before, Jason, about how you need a team that's going to play fast around him. But all that leads me to believe he's, and then obviously we know how badly the Bulls need perimeter defense. He'd obviously provide that. It all leads me to believe that it's a pretty logical fit in a vacuum, but when you break it down, and I just think Philadelphia right now, if they are going to trade him, needs to be like every move they make needs to be to maximize Joel Embiid's window right now, because this dude finished second in MVP voting this year and his injury history is so tenuous. You just don't know when the window is going to close for him. And I just don't think outside of Zach, the Bulls, you know, whatever you think of a sign and trade with Lauri Markkanen or Kobe or Pat Williams or whatever. I mean, the Bulls are very, very limited in the picks that they can trade, but you know, maybe if they could find a way to work in one or two or swaps or whatever, I just don't see how you can build a package from the Bulls' perspective that's going to give the Sixers a better chance to win a title next year.
Unless Zach LaVine's in it.
Exactly. Yeah. So we all agree that's pretty much a non-starter. We can move on from there. And that's why the playmaking four thing is kind of why our partner over at PointsBet, we just wrote about this on our website. The Bulls are not on the, you know, initial odds-on favorites or whatever to land Ben Simmons for all the reasons that we're kind of talking about here. It makes sense. But like the Portland Trailblazers, I believe are the top – in terms of the odds, are the top kind of favorites to land him. And it kind of makes sense because they could maybe accentuate some of his offensive strengths playing off a guy like Dame Lillard. They have a congruent kind of star in CJ that maybe you could work around a swap for. I don't know how that works from a value perspective because both of those guys appear to be lower value-wise than they were this time last year. But we'll see how it plays out. We could probably move on from here, but that was it was a great game. Hawks are awesome. I'm looking forward to Hawks-Bucks Eastern Conference Finals, even if I'm going to have to.
Well, let's move on to that because I'd like to interrupt this Bulls Talk podcast to formally apologize to my Bulls Talk colleagues, Rob Schaefer and Tony Gill. I took the rare victory lap after the Nets went up 2-0. I've been in this business long enough to know you never do that until the final buzzer is sounded. I was duped by the 49-point lead in Game 2, and I crowed about my Nets in 5 predictions and mocked your Bucks in 7 predictions. So I, Casey Johnson, am here to formally apologize to Rob Schaefer and Tony Gill, who are much smarter about basketball or about Kyrie Irving's injury, one of those two, than me.
And Casey, and? You got to apologize to Chris Middleton, too, as long as we're apologizing.
All hail Chris Middleton. You heard it here on the Bulls Talk podcast. All right, I'm done with that. And what's the next segment?
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
What we got next? What's up next, Tony?
I got a piece of news here that we could bounce around. Adrian Wojnarowski over at ESPN reporting on Sunday that in the wake of the Nets season ending, Spencer Dinwiddie had 48 hours to decide whether he was going to pick up or decline his $12.3 million player option. He reportedly plans to decline it, which means he'll be in unrestricted free agency this offseason. We've mentioned his name in passing on the podcast a couple times as a guy that maybe will be available in free agency. We know the Bulls are in the market for a point guard with Kobe White's injury, a starting point guard. Dinwiddie, to me, is an interesting option. He's certainly a guy to take a look at. Now he will be in the unrestricted pool. You know, we don't know what the linkage is at this point, but what do you guys think of him as a guy? You'd obviously have to do a lot to carve out the cap space, even though he might be a less expensive, speculatively speaking, he might be a less expensive option than a Schroeder or a Lonzo Ball. What do you guys think of the idea of potentially trying to carve out space and going after Dinwiddie as a point guard option?
I'm with it. If Spencer Dinwiddie comes back 75-80% of the player that he was. I'm cool with that. And, you know, he's a professional. He's worked his way up, obviously, one stint already with the Bulls. He, to me, like, went before the trades were made. You know, Spencer Dinwiddie and Caris LeVert and those guys, they made that Nets thing the foundational, you know, maybe target landing spot for Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant because of how hard those guys played and how well they played together. I'm all about Spencer Dinwiddie. And he was a part of my draft process in terms of scouting Patrick Williams, because I took Spencer Dinwiddie's word during that run when he said Patrick Williams is the best player on the floor. So damn it, Spencer, come on over to Chicago and prove it to everybody that you were playing with the best player during your LA runs with Patrick Williams. So yeah, I'm
Pat cool. At 19 years old, Pat's got the recruiting chops. That is
You know, we might have to switch that Kawhi over to LeBron in terms of the recruiting ability. You know, how would you feel? You know, you're opting out of your deal, and all of a sudden you get a call from a 19-year-old say, "Hey man, you know, I see what you're doing. Why don't you come run with the Bulls over here? I got something cooking over here. You know, me and the two All-Stars would love to have you." So I don't know that that's in Pat's character, but I would love to see it happen. I'm down with it, man, because they definitely have to figure something out. Definitely have to figure something out at the point guard position.
Yeah, the only question I would have is defensively, how do you see his fit alongside Zach? You know, but if he – again, we're talking in theory here that he'd be a cheaper option than Lonzo. But I still think, you know, in that scenario, you'd still have to be an under-the-cap team to probably pursue him. I mean, you're definitely not going to get him for an exception. So that's where you also have to weigh it. Like, what costs are you sacrificing guys in the current roster to go make a run at him? I still personally, and I'm just guessing here at this point, obviously we're going to know more whether or not they're adding a guaranteed first round pick salary after tomorrow night or not. But I still personally believe that they're going to be operating as an over the cap team and just using exceptions to sign guys. So that would take Dinwiddie probably out of the running and maybe move it to more like, either exception type targets like a TJ McConnell or somebody, or, you know, maybe you figure out a way to trade for Jalen Brunson or something like that. I don't know. But yeah, if you're asking me straight up, like Dinwiddie, I'm just going to throw out a number like 14, 15, 16 million or Lonzo Ball at 20, 21, 22 million. I'd probably go with Dinwiddie. You know, I think he's a really solid player, and
it's not an $8-7 million gap.
Yeah, exactly. So
yeah, my thinking on Dinwiddie is kind of multifaceted. I think he'd be although he's never been a crazy prolific 3-point shooter, I think he'd be a pretty good offensive fit because he's good positional size, really good driver, just a good a good guy getting downhill, which is an element the Bulls lacked in their offense this year. His last full season, he was I think he was 20 points, 6.8 assists, so around 7 assists a game. Obviously, a pretty good distributor. Got to the free throw line almost 8 times a game. AK highlighted that statistic that the Bulls were last in free throw attempts per game, specifically at his end of season presser. So I think that's, again, these are elements that the Bulls could use in their offense. Defensively, I have similar questions. Casey, I would also have questions about coming off the ACL, although, you know, we're pretty far along with injury recovery and things like that in the NBA. I don't doubt that he'll make it back to pretty close to what he was, especially at age 28. But I would have questions about that. And then all of that just kind of adds.
Zach LaVine jumps pretty well after an ACL.
Too. Yeah, that is true. That is true. But it all just kind of adds, like, the more questions that pile up when you factor in, like you said, Casey, the depth that you'd have to sacrifice to get to that level of cap space, it makes it all the more kind of I grow more hesitant with every question that you stack on top of that, given that decision-making process that you'd have to go through. I still think, and I might be thinking too conservatively, I still kind of skew towards what you were saying, Casey, about staying over the cap. Maybe you find a sign and trade for Lowry, get a rotation player with the full mid-level and kind of see what margins you can work, hope for internal improvement. And then you go into the other thing is you go into next offseason with a lot more flexibility. If you're, you know, cleaning house to try to go after one dude for multiple years, however much one of these guys costs, you're really cutting into your flexibility next offseason too, which, you know, I don't want to be the person that's always kicking the can 1 year. Oh, you know, the grass is always greener a year further down the line. At some point you got to go all in or use the assets that you have. But I think I skew a little bit more towards that more conservative line of thinking but I don't hate the Dinwiddie idea because I think it's a good offensive fit, and it would give them like a traditional kind of like lead facilitator to put next to Zach. And offensively, I think it could be a good fit. But at the very least, it's a guy that's out there, and we just know another name that's going to be in the unrestricted pool. Whereas before, he was kind of teetering back and forth. Is he going to take the player option or not? So we'll see how that plays out.
How patient do you guys think AK is?
Well, I mean, to me, I'll answer that this way. Here's my perspective on that question, Tony. He has started the clock on his watch twice with significant moves already at times when, quite frankly, he didn't really have to. So I guess the short answer would be, I don't think he's very patient at all. I mean, he knew that ownership liked Jim Boylan, and Jim Boylan had another year, and he could have kept Jim Boylan for a year. And the only people that would have been upset would have been the fan base. And maybe some players, he fired Jim Boylan and hired a very expensive coach when he became available. He traded for an all-star and sacrificed draft capital to do so at a time when he had said that building through the draft is important to him because he saw an opportunity to get another all-star. So that's why I cannot wait to see what he does this offseason. And we can wrap it up by tying it into the lottery because, you know, their first clue of how this offseason is going to play out happens tonight as you're listening to this, because the draft lottery is tonight and the Bulls find out if they keep their top four pick. But the other thing is, like, I guarantee you, he knows like what he wants to do if they keep their pick and what he wants to do if he doesn't keep their pick. Now, takes two to tango sometimes with moves you want to make or what have you, but you know, he's got two plans in place, and obviously he's going to figure out which one he has to travel with the lottery tomorrow night.
As you mentioned, as we wrap it up here, last thing, I've been thinking about this every round. Obviously, you guys have too because you watch basketball. How do you think the Bulls would have fared in these playoffs?
Well, I mean, I'll again start with that. But the crazy part is that I don't know if this was in your mind when you asked that question, Jason. Like, the amazing thing about this is watching Atlanta go to the Eastern Conference Finals, a team that finished worse than the Bulls last year. And obviously, look, they have a transcendent player, or borderline transcendent player, in Trae Young. And John Collins is a really nice player, but he's not. And then they have a lot of guys who play their roles fantastically. Capella's perfect in that role.
They got a coach that's been kicking the shit out of some very tenured and respected guys too.
Yep, that's a great call. Shout out to Nate McMillan, who just keeps it quiet and does his thing, man. I got a lot of respect for that guy. So, you know, I think that's kind of why you're partly asking the question.
Yeah, that's it. KC, we don't have to muddle around it anymore. I watched an Atlanta team that I was like, oh, yeah, they're going to have a good five-game experience. Their ass is in the Eastern Conference Finals right now, and they can shoot you out of any gym. So I don't think there's going to be a short series out of Milwaukee anyway.
With two major injuries, too, with guys that were part of their rotation, DeAndre Hunter and Cam Reddish, that they were looking forward to using going forward. Like, I never thought, honestly, being real, I didn't think the Bulls were close to Atlanta going into this year. I thought Atlanta was going to make a huge jump this year. I was surprised at the start that they had. And it turns out they just needed to get Lloyd Pierce up out of here. But I thought get everyone healthy.
So when you say you thought that they were going to be better than the Bulls, that's cool. But where at? You thought they were going to be?
I thought they were a top four seed.
Really?
Yes.
I don't think that was that outlandish of a take because they really were active this offseason. And Bogdanovich
coming into the season, you thought they were better than Boston, Brooklyn, Milwaukee, and Philadelphia?
I thought they were definitely better than Boston.
You thought they were better than the Boston Celtics coming into the season.
Yes. I did not believe in whatever was going on in Boston that could take another step forward into NBA finals them. I didn't believe in that roster. I thought Brad Stevens was there way too long already. I thought Atlanta's talent was going to push them as a top four seed. I didn't think they were going to the Eastern Conference Finals. No way. But I thought they'd be a top four team in the East. Their talent. I thought Trae was going to make a huge jump because he already had made it. He started in the All-Star game like within like 3 years. Like I was like, yeah, he's about to take off.
No, I'm not arguing with that. See, the issues for me, like John Collins, I love him as a player, but when he and Lauri Markkanen had the same fate coming into this season, I compared them on the pregame show. I said, hey, you got two guys who their teams have told, yo, go prove it to me. One guy did one thing, one guy did the other thing. But coming into this season, you had similar fates. You had your star and Zach LaVine and Trae Young. You had your, young coach, or I should say new coach, you know, compared to like the roster. Lloyd hadn't been with them a while, right? I mean, I didn't see that much of a difference between the Bulls and the Atlanta Hawks, to be honest with you.
And like Rob just mentioned, like they went out and got dudes like that fit perfectly with what
Danilo and everybody.
And credit to them too for treating Trae Young the way that he should have been treated, in the way that I don't think a lot of people agreed, in the sense that they treated him like he was ready to do it now. And I don't think a lot of people after last season would have thought that he was. Yeah. And you got to give so much credit to that management structure for doing that, because it paid off. And they surrounded him with a really perfect roster in terms of suiting his strengths and everything. Two things, and I hate to close this on a dark note before we get out of here, on my thoughts on how the Bulls would have fared in these playoffs. obviously everything is matchup dependent, right? So whoever they face could like dictate how you feel about them coming out of it. The one positive thing I say, I think, and I don't know how far they would have gotten, but I think Zach LaVine has a couple performances that really raise his perception across the league. I'm not saying he's Devin Booker or anything like that, but I think if and when he gets to the stage, he will do things that will make people raise eyebrows and catch attention and things like that. So that's one thing on how I think the Bulls would have fared in these playoffs. The problem is I look at the four teams that are left, and I look at a lot of the teams that were successful or competitive before them. And I think a lot of these teams just have two things beyond the superstar talent or the lead initiator that is kind of controlling the pace of the game and everything like that. I see two things that the Bulls really, really lack right now. And I don't know where it comes from at a meaningful level. These two-way wings that can space you out, that can play all over the floor on both ends. The Mikal Bridges, the obviously DeAndre Hunter is hurt, but even, you know, obviously Middleton, Giannis, Milwaukee is flush with these guys. Your Paul Georges, your Terrence Mann's coming out of nowhere. Like that brand of player is so essential to being a successful and versatile NBA team in this day and age. I think the Bulls have maybe a budding one in Patrick Williams. We'll see how next season goes and from there. But they really got to address that this offseason moving forward is some wing depth and some two-way wing depth, especially. And scheme versatility. We looked at the way the Bulls play defense this year, and I'm not sure they could like get into a heavyweight matchup with somebody and be able to adjust and be malleable in the way that they played on the fly to like adjust over the course of a 7-game series. I'd be very skeptical of that because they were so reliant on that drop throughout the season. You know, we saw how that burned not that Utah was only playing dry, like they switch and things like that, but we saw how Utah gets burned when you can only play one way, and when that collapses.
Got the 76ers beat in game 7.
So I just wonder, in addition to the wing thing, which has plagued the Bulls for a couple of years, I wonder if and when they get to that stage. I hope that they can make some changes to the roster this offseason and have them better equipped to go into a 7-game playoff series where you're really adjusting quarter to quarter, game to game. But, you know, just based on what we saw from them this year and the way that late game scenarios so often didn't go in their favor, I'm a little skeptical of how they would have fared in a high pressure environment like that when you're really being so, so closely prepared for game in, game out, quarter in, quarter out. So those are my two things. But again, all matchup dependent.
Yeah, and I don't think the Bulls would be in the Eastern Conference Finals.
No.
I want to make that very clear. They make that very, very clear. Do not think the Bulls would be in the Eastern Conference Finals at this point. I didn't think the Milwaukee Bucks would be in the Eastern Conference Finals. So, you know, but hey, shout out to – this is just the year that, man, if there was a year to be a top 10 team, this is it. This is it, because you can't count on these injuries to all these star players. And, like, I think the league is going to take its normal form next year. And there are going to be some angry dudes who weren't allowed to participate this year and feel like they weren't allowed. So, yeah, Bulls got their work cut out for them. It's still – the fact that this team wasn't a top 10 team in the East this year is just – It's tough to look at. It's tough to
watch. Goff, just before we go here, this is serendipitous. I opened Twitter as we were signing off here, and the first tweet on my timeline is from Cleaning the Glass, a site that I love to use. Just a great site for data and stats and things like that. With Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid on the court together in the regular season, the Sixers outscored opponents by 16 points per 100 possession. That's in the 98th percentile of all lineups that played in the NBA this season, plus 19.2 points per 100 possession. Oh, sorry, in the playoffs, plus 19.2 per 100 possessions. So sometimes your numbers and the numbers in your eyes tell you two different things. That's in terms of their long-term future together. Just kind of interesting.
Guess what my eyes have told me? Their asses have not made it past this round. That's what my eyes have told me.
My eyes read me that quote that Joel Embiid said was a turning point. Yeah. That was what my eyes told me.
I think, it's an interesting study in human behavior. This game of basketball, because Joel Embiid should have had 50 yesterday, but we'll talk about that next pod. We'll talk about the bailout jumpers and him. What's the last time you saw Joel pick and actually roll? Not just pick and fade or pick and pop. What's the last time you said, hey, 7'2" guy who can run really well, go towards the basket because I can't shoot it. So you should set the screen and then go towards the basket. This way, it'll be easier for both of us. But hey, yeah, that's for them to figure out. And Doc Rivers to figure out, and hopefully Josh Smith to make better decisions.
Full circle. And with every 40-point triple-double that Devin Booker has with Chris Paul to the lineup, Chris Paul slides down Jason's all-time point guard list.
Hey, by the way, that's the best, including Kevin Durant's crazy game. Was it game five? Game five? It was a crazy game. Devin Booker's game one was the best game I've seen.
Surgical, man. Surgical.
It's the best game I've seen this playoffs. You know why? Because every read was the right one, whether it was scoring or playmaking. And 2 years ago when they gave him that point guard job, I was like, oh, no, they're ruining him. And they kind of did for half the season. But, man, if you don't realize how smart that dude is as a basketball player, everything that he did game one in the Western Conference Finals was perfect to a T. I mean, I love basketball.
He was playing backup to Aaron Harrison.
All right. On that note, we'll get up out of here. For Tony Gill, Rob Schaefer, my man KC Johnson, I'm Jason Goff. Thank you so much for listening to the Bulls Talk Podcast. And by the way, if you're listening, because you're listening on the day it comes out, because you're a good Bulls Talk Podcast fan, tonight you will be able to catch us on our YouTube show. Make sure you go to NBC Sports Chicago's YouTube page, because Kendall Gill and KC Johnson and me, Jason Goff, we will be there covering the Bulls and seeing if they're going to get this top four pick, or seeing if there will be despair for Bulls fans for the next week or so before we get into our real free agency talk. So make sure you're tuning into the YouTube broadcast. Go to NBC Sports Chicago YouTube page and you get to hang out with us. Thank you so much for hanging out with us for this 45 minutes or so that we've been doing this. As always, take care of each other and be safe. We hope you enjoy the Bulls Talk Podcast, presented by Coors Light. Find us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and your smart speakers. Subscribe if you like the show. Feel free to rate and review us, because you know you love us. New episodes are ready every Tuesday and Friday morning.